Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
She told me immediately, you need to take Kai to the doctor. He's got leukemia. For the next 6 months, we were in the hospital probably 5 months. He would identify himself to the nurses as Batman. So he took that strength, that courage that Batman has, and he related it to himself.
When Bruce Wayne was a boy, he saw his parents murdered before his eyes in the belief that one person can make a difference. Bruce Wayne became the Batman. He became a legend.
I am driven by those impressions that I formed as a three-year-old, as a four-year-old. And that was watching Batman and reading Batman comic books.
He's able to take this tragedy and make it the source of his great power.
This character is in the consciousness of so many people.
Every kid who loved Batman, they'll tell you the same thing. He was human, that he had no superpowers. Every kid identified with him.
Their stories, but they had a power that was much greater than the four color inks that made up the story.
When we read his stories, when we see him in the movies, we see part of ourselves. Not only who we are, but who we could be.
And I'm just running, and the crowd just got so excited. They're just cheering, Batman, yeah, Batman.
These children are fighting to get better. They're fighting for independence physically. And I think that they can see some of that in Batman.
He lifted me up.
So I originally thought he wanted it to be psychology of Batman. He says, no. Let's just call it Batman.
Going through this class, you know, it's gave me a big point of self-reflection, you know, on who I am and who I'm going to be.
I was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 2.5. I would dream that I would wake up with superpowers one day, and when you realize that's not going to happen, you say, well, wait a second, Batman doesn't have any powers. He does it just fine.
Every single studio in Hollywood turned me down and said it was awful and said I was crazy. They said, Michael, you can't make serious comic book movies. It's not done.
I brought comic books into sessions, and all these young people were so gravitated towards it. It helps people who aren't comfortable with therapy become comfortable with therapy.
Kai's wish was to be in a Batman movie. There was no doubt in his mind that he was solving crime, that he was helping people, that he was making a difference.
A person very often will get to the point and they'll say, I've exhausted my potential. I can't do any more. There's nothing more I can do. But the lesson of the Batman, to me as a kid, was, you know what, you haven't even begun.
What would Batman do if he had cancer?
He would try to stand back up and fight it like I did.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave. And with me this week, I have a special co-host because the other two are off tonight. I have Frank Duran with me from Real Books Don't Have Batman.
Hey, how are you? And
what you guys just heard was the trailer for a new documentary that's out now called Legends of the Night. And it's, on the surface, it's a documentary about Batman. But when you delve deeper, it's really a documentary about the power of storytelling and how characters inspire people. And this week, we are lucky enough to have with us the filmmaker who has made this documentary. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Brett Culp to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me to be here with you.
Oh, no. Thank you for doing this. So I'd like to state off up front that I have not seen the movie. And Frank hasn't seen the other. Yep. We both have seen the trailer, and we were greatly inspired by it.
Really excited. Like, I mean, it's great that, like, finally somebody was like, I can make a documentary about Batman, and you found the right topic. Like,
so, oh, thank you.
So what I want to, one of the first question I have off the top of my head is, you know, there are a lot of characters out there. There's a lot of stories. Why did you land on Batman?
Well, you know, Legends of the Night is a documentary film that tells the stories about people who were inspired to become real-life heroes because of their childhood love of Batman. And I think Batman is the perfect character for this kind of study for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think the obvious one is that Batman is human. You know, he's the superhero without superpowers. It's become almost a cliche.
Yeah, he's with the this human character. In the Justice League. You know?
Right. Among right. The gods. Exactly. This is a guy who, you know, his story is not about being given powers and then having to decide what to do with them. This is a guy who is born of tragedy, who's born of his own pain and of his own decision to rise above his difficult circumstances and to use his pain as an inspiration to do something great in the world and help other people and keep other people, you know, hopefully from experiencing the kind of pain he had. And I think, you know, there's a part of us that even though we love Superman, and we sure hope there's a Superman in the world someplace, we long to be Batman. I mean, we want that. We want to believe that deep in our hearts that even though we're broken and we're flawed and things are difficult in our life and we've gone through difficult things, we want to believe that there's a hero within us and that we have the ability to create positive change in the world. And I think that's something that starts with us when we're kids and then we grow up with. And so I love the idea of this superhero without superpowers that so many of us dream that we could be. And I think that's a powerful image. And I think it's something that we all long for in our lives.
I completely agree. That's amazing that like you've gotten down to that. I mean, how many of us dressed up as Batman as a kid? I mean, absolutely. It starts young and it keeps going throughout your life.
Yes. And now when you landed on Batman, you decided to make this movie. I'm sure it wasn't an easy decision to make it to jump out and do this since you're doing this all on your own, correct?
That's right.
Were you scared?
That mean you are the filmmaker and the producer and like did you do all the camera work or
yeah when you see the first closing title is that I'm the director, the producer, the cinematographer, and the editor.
Well, so, I clap at you, sir. That is fantastic.
I forgot to mention that Frank is a film student, so
yes, I am a senior student and I applaud you, sir. That is incredible.
Thank you. You know, the things that we finally got help with at the closing stages, you know, once we realized that we were going to watch this movie in more places than just my living room, was, you know, we had a professional colorist out of LA that went through the entire film shot by shot and created an amazing coloring look for us. In fact, if you look at the trailer of the film that's on YouTube, which has about 250,000 views. Yeah, I think that's right. I'm like terrible that. At math. Something like that. It's 250,000 views. That video, I colored myself. That trailer, I colored myself. But then if you go to our website, wearebatman.com, you can see the one that my colorist did, which is miles better. It's the thing I hate about YouTube versus Vimeo is that with Vimeo, you can replace the video clip, and with YouTube, you can't. So you can actually, if you're a film person and you're interested in coloring, you can compare the coloring on those two trailers and see the difference in terms of my lack of skill. But so we brought in a colorist. We brought in a composer who did the score for us, and it's the same person who did the score for the trailer. His name is Dan Phillipson out of the UK, and he's amazing. And then we had a professional sound mixer who did the final mix because we knew we were going to be in theaters, and you know, it just needed a professional mix that would make it sound just right.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, music definitely adds a lot of emotion to a movie. And with a movie like this, which is, you know, very emotional, I'm sure it just gave you that extra kick that you needed.
Absolutely. You know, my original thought, I have wonderful, because of my work, you know, in the past, I have wonderful friends who, you know, that we license music from. And I had the opportunity to get, great arrangements on stock music libraries and all that. But once we started having success and we had some budget available to us, I realized that we really wanted a custom score that had a consistent theme all the way through, and that's what happened. I mean, Dan Phillipson did this amazing score for us, and his music is the music throughout. It's all custom created, so it's beautiful.
Very cool. Now, how are you guys bringing this around the country? How will people be able to see Legends of the Night?
Yeah, we've done this really unique thing. First of all, I mean, every piece of this film, the tagline for this film, Legends of the Night, is "We are Batman." And so, you know, we wanted to bring that "We are Batman" spirit to every piece of this. So the film's message is this message of, you know, we have the ability to bring that Batman spirit into the world. And the way this movie was created has a very Batman spirit to it in terms of, I mean, literally over 1,100 people contributed funding via Kickstarter and Indiegogo for this movie to happen. So there was definitely that kind of spirit and giving heroic spirit. But then we wanted to create something like that for the distribution process. You know, the normal way that you work on distribution is you go to the film festivals and you try to stir up buzz and try to get a distributor, but the world is changing, and even that, pursuing all that, and, you know, we had the discussions with the film agents and all that, and I just never felt right about it, because the biggest goal of all that is, well, how can we monetize it, and how can we generate revenue, and all of that, and I totally get it, because if you're going to invest marketing dollars and publicity dollars and all of that, it's got to be for a purpose. I understand all that. But that, a lot of that didn't feel right to me, particularly as the initial way to release it into the world. So what we've done instead is we've partnered with a company called Tugg.com. That's Tugg.com. And what we've done is we've created this unique partnership where anyone in the U.S. can request a screening of Legends of the Night at their local theater. You go to our website, wearebatman.com. You click to request a screening, and then you fill out a request form. And when you do that, you put in your zip code, and it pulls up all the partner theaters that we have connections with that are in your zip code. And then you pick the theater. You give them a couple options on dates, and then Tug, essentially, through their connections, they make the connections, they get the screening scheduled, they handle all the logistics technically, and the theater goes up, the screening goes up online. It goes up on Tug's website, we put it on our website, and then people have the ability to buy tickets. And what's awesome about it is, then the way we've set it up is that whoever requests the screening, you get to choose, and the revenues that would have come to our studio will instead go to the charity of your choice. So essentially, you're having a night where everyone that buys a ticket gets to be Bruce Wayne, because proceeds from the event are going to go to a local charity. And so it's got the Batman spirit all over it.
That's fantastic. It really is. You got the whole spirit of the movie even in the process of putting it out. That's so great.
Yeah, that's what we wanted.
So I have a question, a follow-up question to that. Have you have any thought to bring this to possibly conventions, maybe San Diego or New York Comic Con?
You know, we've had some invitations, and the movie did play at Amazing Arizona Comic Con. I think it was in January. One of our executive producers, Josh Costella, took it there. And then it's also playing at C2E2 in Chicago.
Okay.
I'm not sure when that is, but again, Josh Costello, our executive producer, is the one that's doing that. And then we're in a conversation with Wizard World, and I don't know where exactly that's going to go. We're very open to that, but that's not, you know, for me, those kinds of screenings are, you know, those are going to end up being free screenings. This thing that I just talked about in terms of raising the money for charity, mm-hmm. that's really my top priority. That's where I'd love people to go see it and screen it in that sort of way. But we're not closed to that. And the Comic Cons that reach out to us and are excited about us, we're not saying no.
Okay, cool. No, because I mean, I'm sure, you know, I mean, people are going to hear, like, I found out about this movie through hearing you on Fat Man on Batman.
Yeah.
You know, and then people will hear this interview and the word gets out that way. But I just figured a way to get in front of a large group that already has an interest in the character, just to get the message out there more, too, is a good way to do it.
I mean, absolutely. My podcast is all Batman. Like, that's all we talk about. Like, we do weekly reviews, but it's all Batman.
Yep. Yep.
So how long did it take you to make the movie from the moment you decided to do it to when you were done editing?
Yeah, this was a 2-year process, which, as I understand it, for documentary films is not too bad. particularly one where one guy is literally doing everything. So, mm-hmm. You know, it took, I think we probably spent about 3 months, you know, really researching and finding all the stories that were going to be in the film and, you know, identifying a lot of the interview people we wanted to interview. And then also raising some initial funding via Indiegogo, which is a very time-consuming process, just the fundraising and campaigning and all that, and raising awareness. And then I spent about 6 months just filming in 2012, just filming and nothing else. And then late 2012, I was filming and editing kind of at the same time. And I was doing this all in my spare time. I mean, I was doing other work and doing my normal video production projects, which I do high-end weddings, and I do corporate not-for-profit work as well for video production, filmmaking. And so I was kind of doing that. And then we really wrapped. I thought we were done with filming in January of 2013. And then when I started into the edit in earnest, and when I got into the edit, you know, this is something that as a documentary filmmaker, you know, I just learned through the process. I thought we had a finished cut, mm-hmm. By about June of 2013. And then we did a focus group and essentially said to that focus group at the very beginning, you know, look, this is about to go out into the world. We need you to poke holes in it because if you don't, somebody else will. And they poked holes in it. And after that, I mean, it wasn't disastrous.
How long was the cut at that point? Like, how long was the film?
It was about the same length it is today. It was about 80 minutes. Mm-hmm. And essentially what came out of that was, you know, some stuff. There was stuff that was a little too long, some stuff that was a little confusing, some stuff that needed kind of reworking, and I would go back to the footage and be like, yeah, I don't have that. And so then it required more shooting, so then I spent another 2 months doing some pickup shooting. We added a couple of more stories that when I really heard their feedback, I was like, yeah, we're missing some things here, like in terms of the overall story. And so, you know, and that's the challenge with film process like this is, you know, documentaries are so organic. When you work on a feature film, you know, you script it out, you storyboard it, you can really kind of see it in advance. And with a documentary, you can't. So you go out, you shoot and shoot and shoot, you bring it back in the edit, you think you've got it, but then you kind of don't. So, you know, then I spent July, we did go out to San Diego Comic-Con in July, so a little time was spent there. But then I spent July, August, early September really refining it and working with the composer to, you know, fine tune the music as well. And then it went to the colorist and the audio mixer mid-September and was really done by October. So that was kind of the run with it. And then once that was done, we wanted to start getting it out, and we got it to our Kickstarter contributors. And then it was a matter of figuring out how we were going to get it to the world. And that process has gone pretty quickly. It's been a bit of a whirlwind for me.
Yeah,
it sounds like it. So when you finally landed on Batman, how did you find the stories? Did you go out and look for them? Did you just ask people online? How did they come?
Yeah,
to you?
I wish I had like a more dramatic answer to that question. But my real answer is we started with Google. And I used the search term inspired by Batman and just went through pages and pages and pages of Google searches. And that's where we started. I found about four or five stories that got me started through that. But the other two things that were on my mind from the very start were a book that I read called Wisdom from the Batcave, which was by Cary Friedman, who's a rabbi, who's mm-hmm. in the movie. And he wrote a book that was essentially about how, you know, these things he teaches every day as a rabbi, he learned a lot of them as a little kid when he was reading Batman comic books. and it's a wonderful book and very sweet and great for all ages, and my boys have read it and love it. And so I knew I wanted him to be part of the film. And then I had also, as a Batman fan, read Michael Uslan's book, The Boy Who Loved Batman. And I was just in love with his story about what he went through to bring the 1989 Batman to life, you know, in the 10-year journey and really the lifelong journey he was on to make that movie. And I knew I wanted that story to be part of the film. And so, you know, 6 months of my life was spent begging for that to happen. And mm-hmm. that was, you know, that was awesome. And Michael is an amazing guy and really is kind and generous and one of the coolest guys in the film industry I've ever been around. And so, when that happened, that was super exciting. And then once we had, you know, those initial stories, we had Michael, we had Carrie, then things started to organically happen. I started sharing what we were doing and how we were doing it. And then people started seeing every time, you know, my Facebook feed and my email box was filled with people saying, you know, sending messages like, have you seen this story? Have you seen that story? Have you seen about this guy that got pulled over in his Lamborghini dressed in a full Batman costume while he was going to a children's hospital in Baltimore? You know, all that stuff just started filling up my box. And so everything else came organically.
Cool.
What is your favorite story from the entire thing?
You know, it's going to sound terrible because it's going to sound like I don't love all the stories. I do love all the stories. But I think my favorite story in the movie, which is not in the trailer, because I filmed it after the trailer was done, but I'm not sure I would have put it in the trailer anyway because it's complex enough, is a story, it's Petaluma Batman. And it's a guy in Petaluma, California, who is a 19-year-old kid who dresses up like Batman and goes around the city doing good deeds and nobody knows who he is.
Wow.
In fact, I don't even know who he is. When we filmed him, he never took off his mask and I never asked him to. His story is so, it's really a beautiful statement of the fact that anybody can be a hero. It expresses the heart of Batman as well as any story I've ever seen. And it also, what I love about it is that it goes back and forth between being emotionally touching, but also just being lighthearted and fun and almost being like Batman does Norman Rockwell in the small town of Petaluma, California. I mean, it's just, you know, it's fun, it's light, it's happy. It just puts a smile on your face. You cry and then you smile. I mean, it's just a beautiful story and it's probably my favorite in the film, although it's hard to isolate. They're all great for different reasons.
One of the things, you know, I found when I watched the trailer and I've been, you know, reading all the information on your website, being someone, you know, who was, when I was a kid, you know, I was an outsider, I was picked on, those kinds of things. I escaped into comic books, you know, to have a world where I felt like I had power and to get away from, you know, the madness of real life. And, you know, that helped me through my childhood and my high school years. I never thought about these characters inspiring people to the level that your movie shows, you know, because, you know, when you're told you're a kid, it's kid stuff, you know,
yep.
And adults don't care about Batman and adults don't care about superheroes,
mm-hmm.
But that's not true at all, is it?
No, I don't think it is. And my film shows, you know, Legends of the Night shows these things at a pretty big level. You know, you're seeing it in the lives of people who it's had a profound effect on. But the experts who are interviewed in this film, because the film is also filled with, you know, PhDs and experts from around the country in fields like psychology and literature and storytelling and, you know, people who've written whole books, academic books on how stories are affecting us and how we're changed by them. And, you know, the experts that are in the film will tell, you know, they tell you very succinctly and in very unique ways that these stories are changing us. You know, they are. And whether it's Batman or it's another story, you know, pick your poison. I mean, really, I mean, in terms of what it is. These stories not only reflect who we are, but they alter the way we perceive ourselves, who we can be, and they alter the way we see the world around us and how we fit into it. And I think, you know, it's naive to say, well, this stuff's just disposable entertainment. It's just light entertainment and it doesn't really matter. We just kind of do it to pass the time and we come out, you know, no better or no different or no worse because of it. And, you know, there's a lot of documentation and research showing that these stories, you know, the wrong kinds of stories can affect us in negative ways, but there's not as much discussion about how these kind of stories, particularly the stories of heroes, which is the focus of our film, can affect you in positive ways and how they can open up possibilities in your mind that you never could have imagined before. I mean, a few of the quotes that I just love in the film are you know, from a guy named Will Brooker, who's really a Batman expert in the UK and has written several great books about Batman from an academic perspective. Mm-hmm. And you know, he just shares this concept that, you know, when little kids dress up as Batman, you know, it's not about necessarily fighting crime, but it's about expanding their possibility of who they could be in the future and the kind of person they could be. And it opens their mind up to the kind of hero they might be in the years to come. And although as children they're powerless essentially to do anything about that, they're making decisions about which side they're going to be on. Are they going to be a good guy or are they going to be a bad guy? And I think this kind of hero play that young people do after going through this process, I think it's an important stage of moral development where you're making some of those choices. And I mean, as you hit adolescence and you hit adulthood, you can remake those choices. You can choose to go back to that selfish sort of, I'm in it for me sort of path. But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid did. And, you know, some of us lose that, and for some of us, love of Batman just becomes about how many action figures we can collect or how many box sets of DVDs we have or, you know, what great our issue of Batman number 400 is. But, you know, I think for others it becomes much deeper, much more profound, and much more meaningful.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, thank you for justifying my childhood. I'm sorry, Frank, you were going to say something?
I would just say thank you, because you also justify my adulthood. So there you go.
You know, there's something very beautiful about loving these characters and something very human about it. And
yeah,
I don't think
Batman
makes weirdos.
These decisions, you know, like yeah. Batman has his own moral compass and it's different, you know, like he makes the decisions. He makes the choice of what's wrong and right. He doesn't sit there and think what this action will have political consequences or anything like that or how it affects it's his justice. And I think that's interesting on a human level, because we all have to make our own choices. We all have to try to strive to be the best people we can be, and Batman is the best human there can be, mostly.
Yes.
But actually, to follow up on that, and it's something I've been wondering since I listened to your interview and watched the trailer and everything, how do you feel there's been a shift, I think, in superhero stories, in the comic books, and definitely in the movies, to more humanize the characters, you know, and bring them down a peg, as it were, to make it more believable and more palatable to a large audience. And as somebody who is trying to say, no, we need these people to be heroes and lift them up so that we have something to aspire to, how does that make you feel when you see things like that?
You know, I mean, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, Batman has, you know, taken a darker edge in terms of modern culture. I mean, I think that started with Frank Miller. And, you know, I think the popularity of that not only affected Batman, but I think it affected all characters.
Yeah.
In fact, frankly, my disappointment, although there were many great things about Man of Steel, my disappointment was I felt like it was too much of a let's turn Superman into Batman because Batman's been so popular recently.
Right.
And, you know, even though I loved that movie on many levels, I thought it was too dark. I liked Captain America by Marvel much better than I liked Man of Steel. You know, just because I felt like they got the character, they didn't leave the spirit of it to try to be something different. Anyway, that's my own opinion. But I think it speaks to exactly what you're saying, which is, you know, there seems to be this desire to make these characters less black and white, more ambiguous, more relativistic. Are they heroes or are they villains? Which are they? I understand that, particularly as this storytelling has gotten more adult and more focused on adults. You know, the reality is, at any given time, there's all these versions of Batman that exist at the same time. So, you know, at the same time that the adults are watching The Dark Knight Rises, the little kids are watching Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Mm-hmm.
And in Batman the Brave and the Bold, there is no ambiguity. In fact, there is no Bruce Wayne, even. He is Batman, 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 and never even takes off the mask in Brave and the Bold. And he is much more of an Adam West sort of Batman,
yeah.
with a bit of a more sarcastic edge than he is Christian Bale's in Christopher Nolan's movie. Right. So I think they're existing on multiple levels, but the good news to me is that even though they humanize these characters and they bring some of our problems to make them connectable, I still believe at the heart of the character is always this heroic spirit. They have never changed that. They have never taken him quite as far as like an all-star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder did, you know, to really mock the character in essence, to go to the far extreme. You know, they've never done that with mainstream Batman. And I think it's because they know that, you know, as much as Frank Miller at this point wants to even make fun of himself, which I can get. I mean, an artist who's done these stories as long as this guy has, I can get why now he's even making fun of his own work. But I think that the core of this character, the heart of him, has not changed. And even though in some of these newer versions, he finds it a little more difficult in this gray world we live in to figure out exactly on any given day what it means to be a hero, which is somewhat where we are on many days as individuals, he still has this yearning inside him, which we all have, to be heroes. And so I think that still speaks to the fact that he inevitably, in the end, is the hero, speaks to the fact that we all long for that. We all want it. And in the end, if we desire it, we can all find it.
Yes. So now I have two questions for you then, after all that. Who is your favorite Batman, and what is your favorite Batman story?
So I'm going to give you a weird answer to who is my favorite Batman. I'll give you my weird answer first, and then I'll give you the answer I think you want.
So I don't care. I just want to hear your answer.
My answer is my favorite Batman is the 5-year-old kid that puts the cape around their neck and runs through the backyard and says, I'm Batman. That is my favorite Batman. And at the end of the day, after making this film, I believe that is the most important Batman. Because all these other Batman, and we can argue about who should be in the canon, who shouldn't, and you know how terrible George Clooney is, and all of that stuff. At the end of the day, those characters are all great. But the Batman that exists in the mind of a 5-year-old boy or girl is the Batman that changes the world. That's the Batman that actually inspires generations of young people to become heroes in their own lives. So that's my favorite Batman by far.
Oh, you're going to move me to tears, man. You can't just do that. You can't just do that.
And what was your other question? Oh, favorite Batman story, right?
Yes.
Okay, so my favorite, well, let me say this. The best Batman story of all time is Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns. There is absolutely no question. That is the best literary comic book telling of in any genre. I shouldn't even limit it to that. It's the best done. Even though I don't agree with all the themes, and I think he went a little far on a few things in terms of innovation, creativity, getting the character. I mean, I watched that animated version recently. I haven't had a lot of time over the past year for obvious reasons, but I've watched about half of it so far, and I'm just watching it going, this thing is a masterpiece. I don't care what you do to this. You can't screw it up. It's so amazing. Yeah. And so, you know, it's just an amazing story. But I also love, and I have to throw this out there because it's something that inspired this film. I love Batman Comics number 423, which is a comic that has been done many ways, but it's essentially a story where three police officers are sitting around a table in a coffee shop telling three different versions of the experiences they had with Batman. Mm-hmm. And they're all different. They're all different versions of Batman. And there's a Batman the Animated Series cartoon that's very similar, where three little kids tell three different stories. Gotham Knights has a story very similar to that within it. It's a very common Batman story. And it's a story, I think it even illustrates in the first question you asked me about why Batman. That story that has gone into multiple versions of Batman, cartoons, animation, movies. It works for Batman, and it doesn't even apply to most other superheroes. I mean, if you did a Green Lantern story like that, who would even care? It doesn't even matter. It's irrelevant. Superman, it would be irrelevant. Spider-Man, irrelevant. In some ways, it points out the multidimensionalness of Batman that exists not only as a character, but as a literary figure that goes beyond all of these other superheroes. Just the fact that that story is so universal for Batman. And so I love that story, and it speaks to even the heart of our movie, that when you watch this movie, you've got, this is the thing I loved about it, is that you can interview people from multiple generations of the last 100 years of our culture. And all these people that love Batman, and yet they experience Batman in different ways. They see him in different ways. I mean, Michael Uslan, there's a guy in our movie who became a police officer and is now became ultimately the captain of the Las Vegas gang unit, handling gang crimes, because he was so inspired by the 1966 Adam West Batman show when he was a kid. He's like, I'm going to fight crime like that. One day, I'm going to fight crime. So here's this guy that was inspired by his love of 1966 Batman versus Michael Uslan, who was inspired to make 1989 Batman because of his absolute disdain for 1966 Adam West Batman. And so here's two guys inspired by 66 Batman, one because they hated it, one because they loved it. I don't even know how you speak to that. I mean, that's as powerful an artistic, cultural, iconic symbol as you can get in terms of how it affects people and how it changes people. And this character, he just keeps changing. You know, he just keeps evolving with the times and yet always finds an audience, no matter how campy he is, no matter how dark he is. We just love him and we can't get enough of him. And we keep just begging Warner Brothers, please put something out so we can give you more money. I mean, we love it exactly. So much. We just desire it. And so when they come out and say, it's going to be Ben Affleck, we all just freak out like our hair's on fire because we just can't stand the idea that our beloved Batman could be screwed up by this guy. And, you know, whether he screws it up or not, who knows? But we just have so much passion and fire in us about it.
Absolutely. It's incredible. You've really, like, captured it all, and it's really awesome to see this film come out on the 75th anniversary of Batman, you know?
Yeah. I agree, and that was definitely not in our mental landscape at all. It's just the way it came down.
And it's wonderful when things work out like that. It's just, it tells you there's definitely something higher up, you know, guiding what's going on when it's a coincidence like that happens, I feel.
The Bat Gods.
And I'll tell you, if we had time and I could regale you with all the stories of this film and where it's, how it's come and what has happened, you would slap me and call me a liar. and then you would say, yes, there is a power greater than you working and present here. And, you know, for me, that's God. You know, you can say what you want, but I mean, for me, that's what it is. And I believe this, you know, God has, for me, for my life, God has been part of this, has guided this project and blessed this project all along. And so now I feel this obligation in many ways to bring it to the world in a positive way and use it as a tool to inspire people and help people and really give it back.
No, I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you in that sense. You're definitely doing you're doing right here. You're doing the good work. You know, you're telling a story, even though Batman's the vehicle, you're telling a story about not giving up and using your inner strength to survive, when you feel down. So along those lines, I would want to ask you, have you had your Batman moment in your life when you needed to move ahead, and who inspired you?
You know, I wish I could give you such a dramatic story of Batman like what's in our film. You know, the story for me is just that Batman has been in my life forever. I mean, my first birthday party was a Batman birthday party, and there's pictures of me wearing a Batman shirt with a Batman birthday hat, sitting on a Batman tricycle in front of a Batman birthday cake with a Batman tablecloth. And, you know, when my sister was born when I was 3 years old, there's a picture of me at the hospital seeing her for the first time, and I'm wearing a Batman shirt. You know, when I was 13 years old and that Batman 1989 Tim Burton movie came out, it was one of the things that inspired me to, you know, really refine my skill and, you know, learn how to make videos and make short films and all of that. And I made little stop motion animations with Batman figures with that amazing Danny Elfman soundtrack in the background and me going like, I'm Batman, I'm Robin, you know, I'm the Joker. You know, I did all the voices and because I had no one to help me. And so, you know, that care. And then as I've grown up, I mean, I had a little Batman action figure that when I was traveling a lot for my job that I would take with me and I would take pictures of it in all these different exotic places I was working. And, you know, and so, I mean, this character has just been part of my mental landscape for so long. So when I had this idea of making a film that was about, you know, the power of story, it was such an obvious no-brainer choice to choose Batman for me because of the impact on my life. And that's in many ways how Legends of the Night came to be.
Yeah, that is definitely your Batman story, though. The boy that loved and played with Batman now making an influential Batman documentary that's going to inspire a bunch of other Batman fans. I think that's called full circle, my friend.
Ah, thank you. Thank you.
So do you have any plans to make another movie after this? Or are you just
the most frightening question of all filmmakers, what's next?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been saying to people what's next is this movie. You know, when you make a film like this, you have to make a decision about are you going to work to have somebody else distribute it or are you going to distribute it yourself? What are you going to do? And I think we're going to focus 2014 on really getting this film out to the world. And our Tug release is the first stage of that. But even the way we've done it right now is just the first stage. We have a desire to connect this movie and this opportunity to have these theatrical screenings that benefit charities. You know, we want to connect this idea and this opportunity to as many charities and not-for-profits around the country as we can. I think when people watch this movie, I almost defy people that are part of a not-for-profit to watch this movie and not find themselves in it somewhere and find their mission and find some way to use it as an inspiration either to their own team or to the clients that they serve every day. My hope is that we'll be able, the first stage of that is to really get it out, let people use it. I mean, we're in discussions with children's hospitals and all kinds of other types of not-for-profits that help struggling families and children who have physical challenges and emotional and mental challenges. You know, this is a movie that we think they need to see. And then we also have goals, you know, educational goals. I mean, we would love to get a version of this movie into schools, particularly middle schools, which are a very hard demographic to inspire because they're so cynical and, you know, can be so sarcastic and all that. And, you know, they don't want to listen to an inspirational speaker, but they might listen to a film, an inspiring film on Batman. You know, and so we'd love to develop curriculum that goes around all of that, that we can then use. We'd love for these, you know, there to be a We Are Batman Day where, you know, or a week or a month where these young people are developing community service projects and, you know, they're doing it as like a We Are Batman type project, all of that. So, I mean, that's a level at which this I've said to people, this is a film. But for me, for my wife, Tricia, who's working with me on it as a co-producer at this point, you know, it's not just a film, it's a project. And
it's
so
a movement. It
is.
That's what you're talking about here. It's a movement.
That's exactly right. And so we'd really like to spend 2014 really working on that, getting those ideas developed, getting them out into the world. And, you know, that's really just about not only getting it out, but also we're probably going to have to do some more fundraising at some point to make some of these ideas a reality. And so at this point, it's really just about getting it out, letting people see it. And so, you know, frankly, I'm less concerned about, you know, well, like, how much can we get? What kind of deal can we get from iTunes and Netflix? And I want to do all that at some point, but that's less concerning to me than that other stuff. And so when we've done all of that and I'm finally satisfied that we have hit every market we can, and the reality is when you're working at the small level I have, I mean, saturation is like a joke. I mean, I could probably spend the rest of my life promoting this movie and there would still be people in my own town that would be like, I've never heard of this movie. This is really cool. You know, when I could be like 80 years old and they could be like, this is really cool. Let's watch it. You know, and so, you know, that's the beauty of a project like this. So I don't know. You could be talking to me 5 years from now and I'm still going to be out there banging on doors going, have you seen this movie yet? But you know, I think you reach a point then as a filmmaker, or, you know, as a, in whatever capacity you're doing, where you will turn to something else. And I do have to make a decision you know, whether I'm going to, I mean, I have, you know, you always have so many ideas in your head. And I'll have to make the decision about whether I'm going to, if we make another movie, stay with like a superhero theme, which is something we've already built a wonderful following for, or whether or not we want to shift to something else. I don't know that yet. We'll have to make the call at some point.
All right. Well, I actually would say to anyone listening to this podcast, definitely jump on Tug, request a screening in your area. The more people we get to see this movie, the more the word gets out there. And actually, when this goes, when this episode goes up, everyone listening, we're starting our own Tug request to get it shown in the Philadelphia area, because that's where Superhero Speak is based. And the proceeds we're going to want to go towards the National MS Society, which is a personal charity in my heart because my sister suffers from MS. So everyone listening, please, we're going to have links for it on our Facebook, our Twitter, and our superheroespeak.com website. Check it out, and please let us know if you're going to come or not.
Awesome. I'm so glad you guys are doing that, and definitely keep me in the loop, and we'll share it on our social feeds as well and let everybody know what you're up to.
Yes, we will do that. And I'm going to ask you something, and I don't want you to answer right now. I just want you to think about it, and you can contact me later if you decide if you want to do it or not. There's a convention coming up at the end of May, which is it's going to be the first annual FanCon. And it's not a convention about having creators and vendors there. It's going to be for people who do cosplay or people who are just, you know, into the culture of comic books and superheroes. And it's about celebrating them. And we've been asked to come to interview random people attending the convention and put it up on our website. So we're going to be doing that. And I think this would be a great opportunity to show the film there because, again, this is about people being inspired by superheroes. So I think it would be a good marriage for the two of them. So
awesome. Well, yeah, let's definitely talk about that.
All right. Frank, if you don't have any more questions, I think we can wrap it up there.
No, it's been wonderful to talk to you, sir. It you are inspiring, and I'm excited to see this film.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for your support, and glad we could connect tonight.
Oh, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us, because I'm sure you're busy promoting your film and raising a family at the same time. I know that's not easy.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I'm glad we could make some time tonight to catch up.
So, as always, for everyone listening, don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week. Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.